Put your right hand in the box.
What's in the box?
Bang. Stop. Put your hand in the box. I move at your neck. The gun to your body.
It's not fear. Fear is the mind killer. And fear is the little death that brings total obliteration. I will face my fear. I will it to pass over me and through me.
The Duke will die before these eyes, and he'll know that it is I, man, Vladimir Harkonnen, who encompasses his doom.
The Sleeper Awakens.
Are you recording now?
Yeah.
Are we ready to do? Are we ready to commence?
Yes.
My fucking little droogie.
Ooh,
that's
you're my
fuck. That's not even what we're doing.
You're my plaything today.
All right.
You're my sweet little rambunctious plaything that I saved from a river today.
Ugh,
you
why
like that?
Was I in a river?
Yeah, because you were lost. And you ended up in the middle of a river. I don't know how you got there.
I tried to fjord a river in this scenario.
You did,
and got lost
now you're
in a river.
Soggy little boy.
I am soggy, but not because I was in that river.
But my name's God Emperor Henry Zakrowski. You're my useless appendage, Holden McNeely. No, no, no. You're not my useless appendage. You're my Sam-brained lizard turd.
Whoa.
Holden McNeely, that's a Fremen curse.
I've been called a lot of things with words I could never say on this podcast. I couldn't even say on this podcast 10 years ago.
Mm-mm.
I couldn't say the things I've been called, but that
deserved each one. Deserved each statement. The last time we left our heroes, they were being spit out of a storm into the desert. Now, we're now covering essentially what is within Dune. There are three books. We had a fun discussion and an actual total misunderstanding before the podcast because I kept referring to book three, and then Holden's like, whoa, we're not even on
Children of Dune.
No, no, but there are three books within Dune itself. Isn't that fun?
Isn't that hilarious and fun?
Everyone loves it. So book two.
By the way, you just did the thing I make fun of my mom for doing where she describes things as fun that aren't fun.
Always.
She'll be like, oh, that's a fun hat, or like, that's a fun porch ornament.
Meanwhile,
you know,
it's like, it's just like, it's a mermaid.
It's
mom.
Just normal.
It's
yeah.
A chicken. It's like, what is this? Is it chicken? It's a glass chicken. Sure, that's
I don't think you've had fun in 20 years, Mom.
I just wish your father would press me on one more time.
All right.
Push
can we
me
please leave?
I don't know why I gave her
the
that. Like,
why is a cot in this scenario? They're not fucking old prospectors.
I don't know how they made you.
So my dad was a corporate lawyer.
So book two of Dune is the middle area, right? Obviously, it's the middle. It's between one and three. But what we're seeing here is, because this oddly lines up with all of the awful reading I had to do for Aleister Crowley for last podcast enough. Not awful, but I mean, just mentally straining, right? Very, very difficult reading.
Yes.
And a part of what he talks about in Liber Abba, is that he has this statement, which I've thought about a number of times, which is, every one of the famous prophets, or like the central prophets of the biggest religions in the world, Muhammad, Jesus, there's always a period of time where they talk about their boyhood, and everybody knows they come from a certain type of boyhood. Like Muhammad was a prince, Jesus, who's fake, was born in a manger, like that story of like humble beginnings.
Yes.
But they always have a middle period where they go away. And what you find out is that they go away and they come back.
The Buddha went off to be an ascetic because he was also born in royalty with everything.
He wanted to get rid of all of his money.
Got
so
rid
he
of
could
all
figure out what
of his worldly possessions so he could have that humble kind of, and then he found the middle way, which is, by the way, bringing up Buddhism is not out of question here.
It
actually
is not.
A lot of Frank Herbert, right?
Yep. You're still in it.
I was about to say Hubbard.
Oh, yeah. It's getting close, buddy.
It is close. He was very inspired by Zen Buddhism, actually, which is the number one type of Buddhism that came to America initially. My dad was really into Zen as well.
The light weekend Buddhism, not like the full shave your head, go away Buddhism.
Yeah.
But some people do that here in America.
And the Buddhism that is full of paradoxes. And
yes.
I know this is, we're bringing this up quite early, but like the paradox is tantamount in Dune.
Yes.
Yeah,
it's cross ideas, things fighting against each other, different versions of the same stories all playing against each other, kind of all show. You have all of these forces, all of them thinking they know what's best for humankind.
Did I use the word tantamount correctly? I just realized I don't even think I know what that means.
I thought tantamount was a set of breasts put on a wooden plank.
I'm pretty sure that's what it is.
So book two is Paul.
Uh-huh.
In his trip of going away.
Yeah.
So he's going to go to the desert. Last time we found them, they made their way through this desert storm.
Yeah.
And not the 3-day war. Do you remember that? We watched on TV.
No, I'm sorry.
The first Desert Storm.
Oh, yes, Desert Storm. Yeah. Operation Desert Storm.
And then Paul is now, he made his way, right? So what he said right before he went to the storm is that he had kind of like, he had met with Lee at Cain's. He saw all of this shit in his mind. He's starting to understand he's prescient. He goes into the Desert Storm. He shits out of the Desert Storm by writing a vortex up and out of it, as the Fremen have been doing since time immemorial, right?
And the noise he made as he came out.
And Jessica actually puts it succinctly, is that when they land, she said, oh, we actually just live the Litany of Fear. Like, that's the purpose of the Litany of Fear. We start to see it actually come to life, where she said they walked into it, they faced something that was really scary, they went all the way through it, and when they turned around, the storm was gone. Now we're here. We're in book two. And Paul, in the very beginning, because I wanted to talk about this last episode, but I forgot, Paul talks about two paths at the very beginning of book two.
Oh, wow, which is very interesting when you think the word path is becomes much more important as the series goes.
Absolutely. But he says there are two paths. There's one where he joins up with the Harkonnens. He has his vision in his head where he's going to go and give himself over to the Harkonnens, join the families like the Bene Gesserit
to do. Like the Bene Gesserit wants.
Yes, but then he also sees this other way, which is the way of the jihad. But he does not know what that means yet. He sees this vision of the Atreides flag flying and an endless jihad going. And he decides, he realizes what he calls himself is a seed. And this is when we get the famous where he sits there and he's like, the sleeper has awoken. Because now he's ready to go. He understands that seed is, to use the sound effect again, is getting pushed into the fucking dirt.
I don't like that sound effect.
Yes, and he is going to form a theocracy. That's kind of one of the, like, a part of his scenario is that you're going to find out is that he's essentially going to create a fucking, he's going to create a religious dictatorship with him at the very top of it. And he sees it when he's a little kid first entering into the desert, because his jihad is very different than the Butlerian jihad, right? Because the Butlerian jihad was a man versus robot.
We got to get these robots out of
fucking offices. I'm sick of Clippy. Clippy just told me he's going to fuck my wife.
C-1402 just passed an anti-abortion bill.
Fucking shit.
Yeah, he doesn't even understand what it is.
But now we know Paul's seeing these settings for the first time. So they're in the desert, and he has no clue what to do. They have very little desert training, but he somehow instinctively knows through prescience, this is how we use the thing called the thumper. They're stuck in the deep desert. The thumper is this thing you stick in the sand, and it goes bum, 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 bump, and it attracts a sandworm so that you can then safely pass through the desert using the natural movement. So you go slide, step, 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 slide, step, slide, step, 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 slide. And they have to do that for 4 kilometers as they watch this giant sandworm. And as he has this moment when he sees it where he feels instant fear, but somewhere deep in his memory, he's like, that's not a fearful thing. That is God. Like, that's a thing I'm supposed to honor, but he doesn't quite understand it. But he also, now he's starting to see, oh, this thing also has something deeply connected to the spice.
And he doesn't even know at this point that the Fremen worship the worm.
No clue. No clue that the Fremen worship the worm.
And also, I want to connect this really quick, because you're talking about him leading this jihad and all this kind of stuff. I just want to remind, essentially, our audience of the Missionaria Protectiva that perfectly set him up to become this chosen one leader of this religion, because the Bene Gesserit implanted this idea of a Neo coming to them at some point. And that was them doing that, setting up myths and legends in their community in order to pull the puppet strings like they've been trying to do. And again, Paul's going to essentially use this against them and defy them eventually by being able to just slide in as Mr. Neo.
You say defy, but then you also see that they also found their point. Because I was looking up the definition of jihad, because they also talk about in Islam that part of jihad is there's also an internal struggle. There's an internal struggle to believe, right? That is like one of these things. So what you're going to see is the Fremen. Is it a blessing or a curse to make every one of your beliefs come to life and come real?
And also, do you believe in life after love?
Love, 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 love.
After love.
Cher did.
Yeah.
She keeps on keeping on.
She's been fucking slamming him down after
Moe Teat.
Toast Sunny. Dude, she got much fucking dick.
I watched it. I watched it from outside of her home. I watched it through her big windows. So they manage. They're stuck in the desert, and they got to make their way through. Jessica immediately gets stuck in a big sand crevasse, right, where she gets stuck down, but she goes into this, like, she can go into immediate, like, coma, which would honestly be nice right now. If you could just go into a coma. She can drop in, so he digs her out, but it's this, they sit there, and Jessica, again, is starting to get scared of her son, because she's like, he's very capable. Because, again, it's the reason why they have Timothée Chalamet Ding Dong playing him in the movie. He's supposed to be 15 years old. Like, he's an actual child.
Yeah.
So they make their way through the desert. You have, like, a couple, like, this is like a fun action scenario. They're in there. And finally, it's hard to describe. It's like, because I want to read the book.
Had two people walking through the desert.
They do, but there's like action because they have to run away from the worm, and he sees it for the first time. The worm opens up to the cave hole that they're in, and he sees all the Chris knife teeth inside of it, and he's like, that's pretty fucking cool. And so they finally stop to rest for the night, and they're discovered by Stilgar. Now, we've already met Stilgar. They already know who Stilgar is. These dudes creep up on these motherfuckers. So they sleep. They wake up, all of a sudden hear the Fremen are everywhere. Yes. This is the first time we're really going to see, like while now we've seen them blow up some motherfuckers, these guys, like, wow, just somewhere between just desert Jedis slash, like, I don't know how to describe them. These are like the ultimate B team to ever exist. And Stilgar is very confident when he meets them, because he's like, obviously we got these, essentially it's like, we got these white people in a fucking trap. We're going to fucking kill them. We're just going to take their water, because we know Paul, essentially they sent a message out. Like, they got that little bat. That's what I wanted to talk about. I forgot about last episode. It's like when Thufir Hawat was like hiding with the Fremen, and he's like, we must get the message out to the rest of the siege. And he takes out like this little capsule. It's like a little tube, and he opens it up, and he pulls out a tiny bat, and the bat goes like, and he just goes like, and he speaks the fucking Chopska at the bat. That's their language, Chopska.
Okay.
And then he throws it out, and he goes, and he's like, that will be said. That was the last best bat we've ever had. Like, he was so excited. He was so emotionally connected to the bat. The bat arrives. I love doing
this. This is so much better than reading the books or listening to. For a second, I was like, oh, Henry should just do a full retell, like his own version of. I'm like, oh, that's what we're doing.
That is what we're doing. The bat came them and told them, you got to save Paul. Paul's alive. The Duke's son's alive. The duchy is still active on Arrakis. And you guys got to get a hold of him. So they see Paul, but then they look at the mom and they're like, honestly, straight up, he's like, the Fremen, you know, we don't know what to do with you. I think we're going to have to kill you. She immediately shows her worth. So she does this because, I mean, first of all, the way they describe Jessica, Frank Herbert's just so fucking horny. He's just so in love with her. And she does the thing where she was like, I'm not going to use voice against him because I don't want to take away his agency because he's worth too much to be compromised. So you already just like, I can beat these people. Like, I don't know how they have this confidence, but they are very, the Bene Gesserit and people on Caladan just in the fucking general are very, very confident. And so Stilgar comes down. It's like, all right, we're going to have to kill him because he has these like moves, right? Because the Fremen are real fucking fast. They don't fuck around. And so they're not like, what I love about the Fremen, they're not the people that expound dramatically about all the things they can do and then kill you. They just fucking stab you in the throat.
Yeah, they just take you out. They get you in the crosshairs and take you out.
They take you out. Jessica, he comes in, fucking flips all around him, right? It's the fucking cool. No Dune movie has done the scene correct.
Right.
No one's done it correct. He comes, got the fucking knife to his
Jessica's
throat.
Jessica's just like, oh, fuck.
Oh, what the fuck? But Stilgar, because he's a cool motherfucker. Yeah. So, like, Paul, he sees what his mom's doing. Because, like, the Bene Gesserit, they always put it in this way. They could tell, they do everything by going, like, just doing mouth movements at each other. And they're like, my mother told me to dodge to the right and then move quickly to the left, knowing that Jaimus, he can only attack from the right. Like, they say this, like, random-ass shit.
Yeah.
So, Jaimus, who we're going to meet, hothead. He's like, we have to kill them. We have to take their water. And so Jaimus comes right for Paul. Paul fucking all 95 pounds soaking wet to him, right, Timothy right. Shamalama Ding Dong. He rolls into a thing, punches him right above his dick, and then scurries up the mountain. Jessica has total control of Stilgar, and meanwhile, Stilgar, he's just popping a bone for it. Because he goes, ha ha, if I knew that you were skilled in the wielding way, you would be worth 10 times your weight in water. And so they go, they have this moment, we're like, whoa. Because now, he's saying this term, the weirding way.
Yes.
Which we've never heard before. The weirding fighting style. The like, and Jessica's also not heard everything. So,
and Jessica, she thinks she's this, like, she's got all the, her own technique. She's got her own fucking sword style, essentially. And that's what's going to be this beautiful merging, this fucking sex between these two different fighting techniques. Going to make you unstoppable.
The perfect member of the unstoppable jihad.
So what makes the weirding way the weirding way?
I don't know. The Bene Gesserit have their style of what they call like the Pranu Bindu training,
yes,
which is like nerve training, and they have high powers of observation, but also they are very physically disciplined.
Yes.
They are trained to fight and do political maneuvers. The Bene Gesserit are incredibly dangerous, but Stilgar calls this thing the weirding way, which is just, it seems like they're psychic, which is why this slur witches are always thrown around. But it's essentially what they say is that we can understand more about you from you just walking around than you telling me anything about yourself.
And it also, I think what the main thing about it too is that it essentially allows you, with the weirding way, it almost gives an in-person impression that you're teleporting through space.
Yes.
Because you can essentially like know exactly where you're going to be at a certain point, and your speed and your movement so swift and
so
amazing. That's how he's like right behind her before she could even realize it.
Yeah, you know what I mean? she slips around him, and he immediately sees, okay, first of all, we know our legend says that a boy king is going to come and be the dude that is going to help Fremen essentially get Dune. Like, we'll go a little bit farther into this now, but the Fremen, they want Dune for themselves. They want Arrakis for themselves. And Jessica immediately knows, it's like, what we'll do here is, like, I won't kill you. I won't kill, because I could kill all you motherfuckers.
Yeah.
He's like, but I won't kill you. We're going to blend our tribes together. I'm going to teach you guys the weirding way. I'm going to make you guys unstoppable. Because the way the Fremen work is that anybody who bests the boss is the boss. You have to do all of these, like, there's a lot of official rules in Fremen society, which is interesting for a very free, like, mountain people. There's a lot of rules. And so one of those rules are, is like, technically, she's now the leader of his siege, but because she didn't officially challenge him, she's not. But now everybody kind of sees she can kill any one of us if she wants to, and she's saying, I'm going to give you these tools.
Right. I think I know why there's a lot of rules, is because more so than anything else, these people have a minute-to-minute survival issue.
Yes.
So that is why there's so much structure.
Very, very intense. And they're on a long-term goal. But now Paul, so he's feeling really confident because he punched Jameis in the dick. And Jameis was this fucking hotshot dude that everybody was fucking trying to suck his bee on, right? Because this guy, he was the hot new realness in the Fremen group. But guess what? When he scrolls up the thing, guess what he hears? He's been like, there's no way I would ever allow you to hurt anyone. Hurt my father or hurt anyone in my siege. And he looks up and what does he see? This chick. Chani
now, is, let's just say, Chani is this slick, hot dime piece, bro.
I guess so. And so she comes, it's somebody's a Zendaya.
A nine.
Zendaya is in the
film. She's a solid nine.
So she, Paul realizes, oh, this chick could have killed me this whole time. Because she was like hidden above him in a thing. And she hit, but he also sees it, and he sees the butt, and he sees her face. And he first goes, what are these feelings? I have never once had this protrusion. But then also at the same time, he's like, oh, I know that girl from my memories. Like, that's the first connection. He's like, oh, shit. I've seen all of this before. I know her. I know these people. And I kind of know how all of this is going to go down. But we're also going to see Paul is starting to become a little bit of a dickhead. Because he does not like jokes. Because what happens is they relinquish the hostage situation. They're like, okay, we're going to go back to the CH. And now we're going to begin Paul's actual training. Or even though he's been trained his whole life, now we're really going to see, we're going to teach him how to be one of the desert.
And why do they bring them in? Just because they see the potential in their strength?
Well, the weirding way is going to be taught. They're going to get that. They're going to get Bene Gesserit training. And they made a promise.
It's like a trade.
Yes.
Okay.
Basically, they said, having Paul, because again, kinda into the idea that he's the Lisan al Gaib. He is their version of the Quetzalcoatl.
Yes.
Like, they think that he's going to be that, but they're not quite certain. More,
right.
Some people are more hesitant than others. Stilgar just liked the cut of Paul's father's jib so much, and he saw the same thing come out of Paul's mouth. So Paul's already talking like an adult man, and he has this thing in his head. He's like, you're barely a child. You're more of a... Like, so they start calling him a man-child, which he gets really mad at, where he's like,
yeah.
My name's Paul. And he'd be like, all right, Paul. Like, listen, these guys all could... If they all got together, they could kill you.
I still get called man-child.
You are
one. Upsetting. Absolutely. I was in VR last night. That's what I was doing with my time.
I'm a boy eggplant. So they will go back to the CH. And the problem is that Jameis is really mad because he got punched in the dick by a 15-year-old.
Yeah,
and he is
upsetting.
A badass. And so they're like, fuck it. We're doing a duel to the death. They have to do these with this ritual thing. He's like, I'm calling him out. One of the tests. Basically, you find out there's like a bunch of tests that I guess they've all been waiting for this to happen. That we will know that Lisan al Gaib is here if his mother can pass a test and if he can pass a test. So one of the first tests is that the mother's champion has to best a champion of the Fremen. And Jameis decides to say, I'm calling it. I'm pulling the trigger. I need to fight. If you're not going to fight the mother, I'm going to fight your champion, which is your son. You brought him, right? So 15-year-old little fucking boy. And his little loincloth. They strip them down all their fucking still suits.
It's me versus you. Yeah,
we're
he's coming
do
in.
This to you.
That's just making the guys
Stop
doing that.
Take
this. We are men in this arena.
In the bush.
Don't push my bush.
In the bush.
Do not push my bush.
And so he gets his Chris knife. And, you know, this is the thing. Up at this time, honestly, even me too, you're reading this, and he's like, he's a little kid, you know? And yeah, he can kick some ass, but, you know, what can he do against these, like, rugged warriors? But Jessica looks at him, and she sees him start to, like, weigh the Chris knife and swipe it all around, like, get ready to go, right? Which is made from the tooth of a sandworm, and it's very, very sacred to the Fremen, right? Because it falls apart without human contact. Like, it has to be up against your skin for it to stay together, and you have to blood it, right? It's pretty fucking sweet. And so he's... like, Chani's already given him inside information, even though I don't know why she's immediately, but she's kind of negging him.
Yeah.
Right? Like, she's like calling him man child and stuff.
Yeah.
And she's
yeah.
like, wow. Stop it. Oh, I'm the Duke's son.
She's like, yeah. She's like, wow, your laugh's so weird. I think your laugh's like really
Stop
weird.
Stop it. Stop talking about my laugh. And so they get into this fight, but Jessica has this like vision and she sat there and watching him fight and she realizes, oh, my son's a killing machine.
Mm.
Like, and we, not only is my son a killing machine, by whatever his talents are, we did this. Like, we made him this. And so Paul, they fight to the death, right? Paul, who is used to shield fighting, so in shield fighting, the whole thing is that you're supposed to defend fast but attack slow because a knife has to be wielded slow to move its way through a shield and stab somebody, right? And but so he's kind of off. So all the Fremen think that he's like toying with Jameis because he keeps getting the upper hand on him, but he won't do the killing strike. No one wants to believe that he hasn't killed before. So finally he kills Jameis. Everyone's really mad. And so because they think that he was like fucking with Jameis. And Jameis was like the next in line to be the head of the CH. But there's this like moment where after he kills Jameis, where Jessica, she's so scared of her son immediately. Again, she's immediately scared of it being like, but she's also kind of makes me mad. Where it's being like, all right, you did this. But she says this sentence. She basically says, as he kills, she goes, well, how does it feel to be a killer now? And Paul's immediately all fucked up because he has to basically come out and say, I've never killed anybody before. And they're all like, oh, wow, that's the craziest shit we've ever seen. And we're just going to have to I guess that first test has been passed, that Paul is ready to go.
Essentially that part in Teen Wolf when he turns into the werewolf on the basketball
yes.
court and there's this big moment of silence and then the ref inexplicably just goes, play ball!
Okay, man,
and then they just start playing basketball.
That is literally
everybody
the same scene.
And everybody loves it.
There was like, okay, he can kill. And so they go back to the CH. It's like now, second, because there's not wasting any time. This is the next fucking
Johnny's
test.
Johnny's too eyeing that fucking dime piece.
Immediately.
Her damn stuff. She's
and
like,
Jessica,
you've never
like
killed. I've never fucking slammed down a 15-year-old. So we got
oh,
something
yeah.
in common with never.
And Stilgar keeps like winking, being like, fucking? You fucking?
You keep pointing at these cave paintings, just two people. Weirdly.
See?
Yeah.
This is a menu.
There's butt fuck there, and there's.
You could do any sorts of these fucks. And so he has to go through another test, yes, right, immediately. They're sitting there and they're trying to figure, they have to go to the funeral, right? Mm-hmm. So the funeral, they turn Jameis into water because, and then the water has to belong to Paul because anybody who kills somebody, basically because they exerted so much sweat in the fight, you then get the weight of the water from the person that you killed in order to sort of get your water back. Right. So he feels very awkward about it. He has no clue how to do it because they're just improvising. Every single time they're trying to figure out what the Fremen want because they keep saying there's these tests, but then they kind of just have to figure it on their own. And so what happens to Jessica is she knows they're waiting for some kind of sign. Right. So she sits and she has this moment where she's looking at Stilgar and there's a thing called the Adab happens, which is this persistent memory that comes from the generations of being a member of the Bene Gesserit, where you can see lines in your brain, like it's this kind of like inner bound memory. And she knows the missionary Protectiva dropped hints into this society of what the hell it is that I'm supposed to do next. And she just randomly just starts kind of like tripping balls a little bit. And she starts randomly saying this prayer that turns out to be one of the most sacred prayers that the Fremen have ever had. But what she did, that's a prayer that the Bene Gesserit wrote for them to say to the Fremen later on to find a safe place within the Fremen.
Gotcha, so, Missionary Protective.
Yeah, so yeah. She starts to say this thing and they're all like, oh, like she's she is the one. It's kind of like, remember that song? I'm a bitch, I'm a lover, I'm a child, I'm a mother. There's nowhere I go that I don't think about that song.
I do not feel the same. I'm your hell, I'm your dream.
And so,
I'm nothing ever dead yet.
Adab, persistent memory. This is what this is. And now you have it.
And now I have it.
I'm talking about the people listening.
Oh, okay. Now they have it too.
So Jessica, she sees this shit. She says this. Everybody's impressed. Paul goes to the funeral. He's got to figure out what to do with the funeral because they're all like, I guess they decided no one's going to tell you. This is the one thing about the Fremen that
I love them to death,
but they like want you to guess how everything works. Like no one wants to tell you.
Which is so annoying. You're just like, I get it. It's like so sick, but like just
pointer. Give me something to do here. How do I fucking wrap my head around this ceremony? Paul goes in. He looks at other people. They're all like saying like, I was a friend of Jameis. And they, you know, saying something that they knew about him, but he didn't know, but he saw Baliset there, right? And so he knows the Baliset from Gurney Halleck. And then something happens where he goes, I was a friend of Jameis. His death allowed me, he understand, I knew, he taught me what it was to kill, and I'll never forget. Like this thing,
they're like,
he cries.
They're like, I took the juice from Jambus, and I call it my Jambus juice.
My Jambus juice. And so he goes, cries, it's dumb.
I apologize.
He cries, right? And they're all like, water for the dead. Because nobody be crying in Fremen culture.
Right.
Right? Because every single drop of water is so important.
But don't you feel like that's, crying, from a therapist standpoint, don't you feel like that's problematic to a certain degree? I mean, shouldn't people be allowed to emote and shouldn't their emotions be accepted in a culture?
You're fucking weak.
I get it.
Never cry. I don't have time for crying. Only death. Only rolling over everyone.
Okay? More like Benny Hilsert, am I right? I apologize for these bad.
What are we going to do? This is the show. So, again, he kills, but so everyone's again. He figures out, he's like, so I'm going to play the Baliset. He pulls up the Baliset, but what does he do with this fucking Baliset? First fucking thing? He starts playing a love song to Chani. Mm. And Jessica is like, what is this shit? Like, which is interesting because it's kind of like internalized misogyny on Jessica's part. And she even says it later on. She's like, Chani, that's no wife of a duke. That's no wife of a, that's some Fremen rabble.
She's like, that ain't and no then, duke wife. That's a dookie wife.
That's a dookie wife.
Yikes. But yeah, it was rough.
She realizes immediately, like, oh, I did the same shit. Everyone says I was never supposed to be the fit to be the. I am I'm doing mommy psychology on this woman. She immediately hates Johnny. So they get through these tests, and so they finally give Paul some food, right? Because they haven't had any fucking food. But think about these Fremen; they're eating pure ass spice. And when they eat this stuff, it was like thing we described it. It was a leaf wrap of rice, some kind of grain with spice just in it, with some kind of bird meat in it, right? And he ate it, and he starts tripping fucking balls.
And this is his first interaction with the spice?
This is the
second time
delving into prescience. And this time he understands that he starts to have more of control a little bit more now than he did before, where he's starting to see a little bit more how he can navigate his way through prescience. But he has this moment where he keeps seeing himself dead. Stabbed to death. Like, there's all of these, he sees every single way, like, it's really very scary for him, and he starts to know, like, oh, we're all heading towards this massive war, and that the front of the war, at the front of the head tribe, is an Atreides flag, tattered, covered in blood, right? We're gonna be killing a lot of people. But again, what I love about the prescient scenes is that in my mind, it's going to book five. Book two.
Yeah.
The Balearian Jihad. He's seeing like every
section.
The
second you said that, I started thinking of Paul in book three. You know what I mean? And,
yes.
And trying to figure out when that. But this is a path he's trying to avoid fourth sight, right? He's trying to get away from.
But he ain't gonna.
Yeah.
He fucking ain't gonna. I do want to immediately talk. So let's take a little break from the middle of the sketch to the death of Liette Keynes. So Liette Keynes, the ecologist, he was the basically completely, he fell in love with the Atreides family, and he helped Paul escape. But now
yes.
the Harkonnens have punished him, and they've dropped him off into his precious desert for his desert to consume him. And what you have is this scene where he's going through the desert, and he sees his father, who his father was the ecologist before him for Dune, and he reveals the whole plan. That they realize that all they have to do is something like 3% of the planet, that all we need to do is change 3% of the planet, and we will terraform all of Arrakis and make it have active water and plants, and we will take it away from being a desert planet, and we will create a separate area for where the spice can be created by the sandworms. But I find it interesting that there's all of these baby gods in Dune. Where Liette Keynes had become sort of a pseudo god slash king to the Fremen. They've looked up to him because also Chani's Liette's daughter.
Mm.
And so because he's fully in the lifestyle. But there's something about the long view that all of these other people have for Arrakis that don't pertain to the Fremen or anybody else. It's like everybody's got an idea of what they want to happen to Arrakis, or an idea of how to control society, how to control the path of all humankind, but none of them understand that this Kwisatz Haderach is going to destroy everybody's plans, which I find why there's something about it that was like really haunting to me. As like I sat and I realized, I was like, all of these motherfuckers think they know what's best.
Yeah,
they all do. And eventually Paul will fall to the same
that's when we bring it back to our reality, right? Like, isn't that not the case for all of your parents, for everybody? You know what I mean?
Yeah, and what you could say, honestly, though, is but Arrakis is gonna Arrakis, and there's nothing you can do to change it. And the Fremen understand that more than anybody else. And all these other people who have games.
You got to give it up, which is why they worship the sandworm, maybe the most chaotic force in everyone's life is what is being worshipped as a god by these people.
Well, what you'll find out is that they have a very harmonious relationship. So after the funeral, they're back in and they go into this big cavern that is just filled with water. Mm. And Stilgar's like, we have thousands of these. And one day, I mean, it won't be our children or their children or their children or the grandfather of those children. But one day this water will change this entire planet. And Paul was like, this was up!
And that's the same thing, honestly, in modern day is like when the dad brings their son down and shows him the bins and bins of Beanie Babies. And he's like, of course today these are only
you mean nothing, a piddling worthless comrades.
But in 20 years, you will be a millionaire with these.
Yes, Daddy.
Meanwhile, cut to me in Florida in my parents' garage with the two giant bins of Beanie Babies. Just being like, these are literally just filled with rat shit.
This is nothing now, and all of your work you did means exactly
But Henry
zero.
Thomas, look, it's a Princess Di Bear.
This is from when Princess Di died.
I'm shooting a hole through your television with a gun so that you can never go on a Shopping Network channel ever again.
You're killing me, Mom. You're fucking killing me, Mom. But you go, one thing about the visions that I thought was finally interesting, I looked up because he described it, because Frank Herbert throws terms into the book that come to Paul that you know that are only like, they're like Earth terms that he now is working on that you will know later on in the series that we do come, the Earth, as we know, as we talked about, is, you know, we existed in Dune World.
Yeah.
And so he calls it the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. Which is, that's how he views the future of the world. He basically, now that he's starting to trip balls more and more regularly, he starts to realize, like, every breath I take changes the future. Every movement I do changes the future. Every single thing I see it branch. Every little, literally every movement I do.
And I'll be watching you.
Biggie, man. I'll miss you, Biggie. We all do.
We miss you, Biggie Smalls, miss you, bro.
Come back, dude. I'm so mad.
Also, that's
fucking destroy
you
my
took
brain.
It to the Biggie song, but that was a sample, of course, from a
the other song. Let's do it. Everybody,
it's about a stalker, actually, too, which is
Sting.
Weird. Sting. Oh.
In Dune.
Yeah.
Brought it back around.
Brought it right back. Yes. Of course, David Lynch's Dune features Sting prominently.
Whoa. the Heisenberg uncertainty principle talks about this. It's a quantum physics idea, right? The idea that it's very difficult.
Is
to
it real?
It's real. Yeah, it's a real term, but it's about the idea that it's very hard to pin down actual locations of things in quantum physics, which is kind of what he talks about, how everything is just moving and moving and moving. But Paul's immediately bitter because it's weird. I get it, because he did not choose to be the Quetzalcoatl.
Right.
And now he's starting to see, fuck, if I'm the only person who can see the future, because I'm honestly kind of a self-important little prince boy, now I'm going to take this burden, this terrible purpose onto me.
Yes.
Now it's me. I did this. And there was a point where he looks at Jessica and he says, you are my enemy. Like, in his mind, after being tripping balls, because this is the thing, because now you have your son, because it's, I guess it must be sort of like watching your child go through puberty, except it's becoming the prophet.
But also, I would say, there's always a point in a mushroom trip where you're hanging out with your buddy and you look at them as the enemy and you think, should I kill this guy?
Do we do a test of wills tonight?
Yeah, do we grapple?
But he views her, he's being like, you did this to me, mother. You made me. You made me this weapon. And she calls him a weapon as well, which I also think is interesting because the two of them don't sound like, guess who? Baron Harkonnen, who also calls people weapons.
Do they know yet? Do they know?
They do know. Yeah, they know now. But
that Jessica is spawn of Harkonnen.
Yes, but Harkonnen, like everything else, which I think Paul's also going to reflect later on, because, you know, one of my favorite quotes from him where he was just like, yes, we are predators, Beast Raban. Predators are always hungry and always thirsty. Which is, again, rewatching Dune, the movie, which I don't do right now. If you're reading the books, don't do it, because you're going to be very disappointed, because it's just Baron Harkonnen in the movie floating to the ceiling going, where in the book, Harkonnen is like a very worthy adversary to the Atreides.
Right.
But we're going to find out he ain't shit when it comes down to being Modib. Because now Paul, they gotta fucking name yourself. Because everyone's got to have new names. Not that he killed Jaimus. Because the first thing that they look at him, they'll be like, your name now is Usul, the base of the pillar, you show strength. And he's like, I want to choose a name of my own. And they're like, okay, what's up?
Because I don't like Mr. Brown. It sounds like Mr. Shit. I want to be Mr. Blonde or Mr. Blue.
Oh, Quentin Tarantino. He should have directed Dune.
Yeah, that'd be great.
But Paul, he's like, what's the name of the mouse that runs through the desert? Which he knows is called Modib. But he wants to see them complete the circle where they go like, Modib, he is Mosa. We call him the children's teacher. And he was like, I would like to be called Modib. But in accordance to my father, because now he knows in the prophets where his first steps of like, okay, I can control fate here. I am going to change one thing I know. They called me Modib, but here he's like, in remembrance of my father, I want to be called Paul Modib, which is weird. But at the same time, he thought that this will be my first step to creating the future on my own. And Stilgar's like,
whatever. Palm o' deep.
And they're all excited and they do the whole like, because, you know, in if this was 1987, they'd play, like, you remember, like, in Star Wars, the cantina music?
Yeah.
Where it's like,
yeah.
Like, it would be like that, where, like, people with big drums and like, fifes. And I don't know what Fremen play. I think they have the balisette.
Yeah. Which is...
And this one guy just, like, beating another man's butt, yeah, like a tom-tom.
They, yeah, I was about to say, yeah, I think they play their own knees, too. Yeah, yeah. It's like, this isn't on any time signature. This means this is bad music. I'm just going to go ahead and throw it out.
It's a celebration!
This is like mumble rap,
bad. It's a celebration!
Love these Fremen. But guess what, man? That's not the last fucking test. Can't get out of the fucking desert until you do another test.
Freestyle rap competition.
You're like fucking, oh man. Nemo, never let it go. Nemo, Nemo, to stop and a stand to blow.
His opportunity comes. He's got one shot.
Yeah, yeah. That's, I love the scene.
None of what you said rhymed, sir, so we're going to have to ask you to go back into the desert.
I just can't go home. My grandma abuses me.
So they, one last test. Right? Because they've been calling Jessica this whole time the Sayadina, which is their version of a reverend mother, which is also was given to them by a Bene Gesserit many millennia ago.
Okay, can you, I've been thinking about this a lot. Can you explain to me how there's a reverend mother in the Freeman, even though the Bene Gesserit are like trying to manipulate
Bene Gesserit!
Either way. Or trying to manipulate, Bene! Trying to manipulate them. How does a reverend mother exist in the tribe of people that are they, is she connected to the Bene Gesserit or is she her own kind of reverend mother? Does she know
is.
About okay does she know about Missionaria Protectiva?
Yeah. Okay. Oh yeah, buddy. She's no she's a double agent.
Okay.
And
okay.
She has
and
been there,
that explains
and
it.
She is a part of a series of double agents that have been going on for millennia. The
okay.
Fremen don't understand these wonderful people. That's why, like, upon this reading, I have a lot less sympathy for Paul and way more sympathy for the Fremen.
Right.
Because the Fremen...
That's so woke, bro.
What? I know, man. It's me, bro. But the Fremen, they've just been endlessly game, dude. And they don't know. They don't know. Because the Sayadina that they have is essentially Bene Gesserit.
Yeah.
And was placed in there a long time ago. And they have to basically now prove that Jessica can become their Sayadina, because that's a part of the lore, right? Is that the mother will become the new Sayadina. Paul will eventually rise to lead their armies. And so they do the ritual where they get the water of life.
Here we go.
Which is essentially a poison full of spice, right? The old Reverend Mother is brought out in a fucking tray. Right, she gets laid down there, and they see each other. They, like, do the wink. They do the little Bene Gesserit, like, click, click, click.
This one little piece of factoid I thought was interesting. The water of life is distinct from the just pure spice. It is the toxic liquid exhalation of a drowning sandworm.
They basically put a bunch of little baby sandworms in a pool, and they die. And then they take that water, and then they drink it. And so what a real Sayadina can do is drink it, and then transmute the poison inside of their bodies to make it not a poison anymore. And then what happens is that the next reverend, the last reverend mother that is about to, the goal is you're supposed to replace a reverend mother. When that reverend mother dies, that reverend mother then, while you're tripping balls, passes the memories on to you.
Yes.
So then you become interconnected to the memories of every reverend mother that's ever been.
Female only, though. Well, none of the men.
That's why there's the Kwisatz Haderach, right? Because there's never been a male Bene Gesserit. Paul's the only male Bene Gesserit that exists, right? But all of these people are now also calling him the Lisan al-Gaib, the one who shortens the path. They're all saying, he's got like five titles
now. Is it Bene?
Now.
Is it Lisa? Is it Lisa? Is it Bene?
What's my name?
What's my motherfucking name?
What? So he goes... She drinks the water of life, and of course, no one wants to talk about this because the one thing that they also knew, I think we revealed last episode, but she's pregnant with Paul's sister. And they're all like, oh no, you're not supposed to do this while you're pregnant. Because what happens is, so when you drink the water of life...
You can't drink the water of life, you're not allowed to eat sushi.
Sushi, coffee, you got your ankles swell.
It was on the list she got from her OBGYN, so I don't understand. Water of life clearly on there.
But what happens is that what that does is it opens both you and your daughter the inner baby inside, the baby inside of you, to prescience of all timelines, which we're going to find out later on is they're very scared of this because it might cause a phenomenon called abomination, where the child now can possibly be open to all of these different past lives.
And we're not talking about when our last president was really popular. That was Obama Nation.
Yep.
This is Abomination.
Abomination. But it's very scary. So it happens and she does it and she fucking crushes it. She passes it and we understood immediately, oh, this is, as a Bene Gesserit, we're not supposed to know the mysteries of becoming a reverend mother. You're not supposed to know it until it happens to you, right? Where you're chosen to become a reverend mother. And then in the instant that she did all of it, she's like, I guess I am. This was it. And now I am an official reverend mother. I'm connected to all things. It's fucking whatever, dude. I've already made all of these different ass decisions that I've already ruined everything. And now we're just going to deal with it. We're going to roll with it. Hopefully Aaliyah, or the Paul's sister, will not become an abomination. But guess what? So it passes through. You change it. Everybody else gets to drink the water of life now because she's changed it to not be poisoned, right? They're all going, Lisan Al-Ghaib. Lisan Al-Ghaib.
That's his new name. One of his 8 new names, yeah.
He looked at his mother. She appeared peacefully asleep in a sitting position, her breathing even and deep. A phrase out of the future that was his lonely past came into his mind. She sleeps in the waters of life. So he knows she's trucking, tripping balls. He, all of his stuff, he starts to see deeper into the future. One side, he sees the Imperium, because now he's the path. This is the last, like, little shot that shows the fucking path hardcore, right? One side, he could see the Imperium, a Harkonnen called Fade Rautha, who flashed towards him like a deadly blade.
We know Fade Rautha, by the way, really
Sting.
Quick, right? Yeah, Sting, who it was the, like,
he's
super
the boy.
Evil dude.
Well, Beast Raban is now in charge of Dune, right? So Beast Raban is Baron Harkonnen's fucking most evil, biggest, fattest son.
Right.
The one that's coming is destroying everything, and yes. He loves it. He squeeze. Yeah. I want you to squeeze them. And then his goal is, he's going to devastate Arrakis, but then bring in Thade Rautha,
yes,
to, as a pleasure.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yeah.
I'll lead them, Daddy. I invented a thing called baseball.
Oh, to have some of this ham meat I just got. It's delicious.
It's made of board. But he loves his nephew in a way that's inappropriate.
Yes.
Because he wants to go to Pound Town on his own nephew.
Of course. He's like every, yeah, like we said, didn't we say he was literally every network executive or studio executive?
Yes,
in
yes, yes. He just wants to lick him like an ice cream cone. So Fade Rautha flashed towards him like a deadly blade. The Soldier Call, raging off the planet to spread pogrom on Arrakis and guild conniving and plotting. The Bene Gesserit, with their scheme of selective breeding, they lay massed like a thunderhead on his horizon, held back by no more than the Fremen and their Mordib, the sleeping giant Fremen poised for their wild crusade across the universe. And he knows he's at the very center. He's at the very center, and then he begins to cry. Begins to cry because he knows that this is just one tiny moment of peace, and there will almost never be. He realizes this might be the last peace he'll ever experience. That's what he says. There's no other place for peace. And so now he knows they're going to be in the war, dog.
Yeah.
And they're going to be doing it fucking forever.
They're getting into the shit. And by the way, what Henry is referring to is books of no peace and no rest, very little rest and peace for anybody involved. So Chani's fully corded in now too.
She's locked in, dog. Book 3 that we're going to get into next week is we're just seeing essentially the superhero ending of how every Dune book begins and ends. Every Dune book begins with 100 pages of action and then ends with 100 pages of action. But then in between, we learn so much.
You know, I always tell people, and I could be wrong in this situation, but when people first start reading Dune and they say they're struggling with it or they're intimidated by getting into it, I'm just like, dude, just give it like 200 pages or whatever it is. But really, when I got to this part of it, I'd say the most page-turnery part of the whole series is kind of coming up here in our next episode, one of the most, because it really does follow actual just page turner book.
It becomes an action
stuff.
Movie.
Yeah, it becomes an action movie.
We're going to go, the fight's going to happen. There's a bunch of war going to happen. I didn't even talk about Gurney Halleck and his trip with the fucking, I wish, you know what I want? And I don't know if it is, I have to look this up about whether or not there are stories just about Gurney Halleck, who is one of my favorite characters in the whole book, because he's just a really, like, I don't know, dude. Halleck's it's a crucial
who,
bro.
Halleck's the one who shows up and tries to kill Jessica, right?
Yeah, if you want to spoil it.
Yeah, I do. This is the whole point of the thing.
We'll get to that, but yes. Because so he's convinced.
He hasn't done that yet. I have my timelines a little switched up. So he does that after they become fucking Super Saiyan, essentially. Like
he is going Super Saiyan right now. So he has gone into the desert, and he has done his trip to become...
Okay,
yes,
yeah.
He is now Muad'Dib, right? Gurney, you see him talk about... He basically finds out that they think that Jessica is the traitor, which is what Thufir Hawat also thought. Because Yui... The only people who knew Yui was the traitor was Jessica, Paul, Duke Leto, and Harkonnen. No one else knew. So Jessica being the traitor is now the word throughout the entire fucking planet.
Right.
So Gurney technically is supposed to kill Jessica on sight.
Yeah.
When he sees her.
Exactly.
But yeah, that scene with him with the smugglers, where he's like hanging out with the smugglers, is such a fun, like, very Star Wars-y kind of thing, where it's like him hanging out with all these like rogue dudes, where they're like, do you want to go off world or do you want to stay here and you want to kill Harkonnens with us? And he's just like, you have my arm. It's fucking so sweet because he knew, because they basically promised him, come help us smuggle shit off the planet and we'll give you as much Harkonnen blood as you could soak a hot dog bun in.
We're also about to jump 2 years, right?
Yes.
Yes, in the timeline. I think a lot of, there's a lot of interesting things about, not that there hasn't been interesting things going on, but there's a lot, it's like we jump 2 years and the tables begin to finally turn in the favor of our Atreides tiny man.
I don't know though. We'll find out next week.
I mean, they definitely do. I've read the book. Well, he absolutely wins in a certain manner of saying it.
You have to keep reading the book, even if you know the ending. Because we're getting to it. Because remember, Dune 1 is just set up.
Yep. So then we started getting these philosophical conversations.
We get to the really nerdy shit.
I can say the word philosophical really easily, philosophical. So it's going to be a very fascinating
Oh, it's going to be great. We're the guys everyone's looking to explain this.
Yeah, yeah, and we'll stop doing the cum jokes. We'll only do sort of high-level thinking conversations.
No, no, we're bringing philosophy to the people with cum jokes. That's called edutainment.
Yes, there you go.
Yeah, that's what we're making it palatable.
There you go.
By making it dollops.
I'm also just going to apologize for all the puns I made this episode. Benny Hilsarit was one.
Someone has to.
We did. I almost made a Yui Bowl joke about.
That's weird. That doesn't even make
about
sense.
About the doctor. I was going to be like, he went off to make bad movies.
I don't even know what that means. But thank you for joining us this week. We will be back next week with even more Dune.
What if we just did? What if we did like Star Wars next week? Just
people will be like, I guess this is the same. And you're like, no, it's not. Dune is actually more important than Star Wars. Yeah, I said it. Yeah. Dune is more important than Star Wars. Maybe not financially for all the massive entertainment companies. But yeah, no, Dune is more
Disney's
important than Star
not
Wars.
Knocking on Dune's door per se at this point. But
they are trying to make the movies, but the problem is that the books are too philosophical. There's a lot of thoughts.
I do also want to mention to talk real quick, right? They changed the word jihad, right? They didn't say jihad in the trailer.
I don't know what
and
they
we're
did.
Thinking that they will not be actually using that word just because of the way that I think in
the
general,
connotation
the
of
connota-
it.
The more modern connotation of that word, right? Didn't they just say something like religious war or
I don't
something
know.
Like that?
I honestly barely paid attention to the trailer because I don't like being spoiled.
Right.
I don't like trailers anymore.
Gotcha. Now I try to stay away
I don't from like them anymore.
I get it. All right. I get it. Sometimes trailer's the best part of the version.
I know, which is sad. That's sad. All right.
Lexi, by the way, Lexi literally says her favorite part of going to the movies is the trailers.
I do like trailers
that
in the
makes,
movie theater.
That blows
though.
Me away, though. It's like, why? I don't know. What a backwards human being I married. But either way.
You put a child in this one.
That's right. And will I give her the spice?
Yes! Make her do the agony!
That's what I'm saying, is they're like, oh, don't give a pregnant mother acid, right? Or whatever. But I think maybe it could
Who
work.
Knows? Abomination!
All right.
So listen to all the other shows on the LPN network. We have got Last Podcast on the Left, Wizard and the Bruiser, page 7. We've got Able Against Top Hat. We've got Kind of Fun. No Dogs
now
on
Space.
Now
you have to list all of them. Now That's you put yourself in this position. Yeah, you have to list
I,
all
I have
of
to
them.
Pump them. I got to pump each one. Get out there. Listen to them.
You missed why? You didn't name all of them.
Brighter Side. Oh yeah, Someplace Underneath. We all because now we have other shows. We got brand new shows. Someplace Underneath.
Yeah,
it's also there. And also we got the new season. No Dogs in Space.
Fraudsters. I don't know if you said
Fraudsters as well. This is great.
This is by the way. I could think about this past episode, Henry, was literally your Paul. The network is the path you're trying to seek out. You're trying to find the golden path for this.
Wait
network.
Till I fucking garb myself in a bunch of sandworm babies.
That'd be start with your exoskeleton, bro. Yeah. You just start coming. It was like, he can jump high now, and I guess that's going to get us more fucking
this will help
listeners.
Me in pilot season.
All right, we got to get out of here.
Bless the maker.
Bless the maker.
Good work. And now for a scene from Dune Theater.
We now join the Fremen Siege leader Stilgar and his first meeting with a brand manager.
Sup, homies! Name's Zaz, and I'm here to flip the script on your traffic. I'm gonna expand your global reach and highlight the ballin' Fremen swag. I asked a mutual the other day, yo, you ever get to ever get down on some Fremen? And he was like, miss me with that dog. And I was like, that is not true.
We Fremen, we live by the whims of the desert.
Oh, I love them. Were they at Coachella? Were they playing the San Pellegrino tent?
San Pellegrino? No, we have to live in secrecy in the desert. We must move as the desert creatures do not gain the attention of Shai-Halut.
Oh, okay. And how many followers does he have? Is it Shia? Like LaBeouf?
Any man or woman who's ever felt the rasp touch of the bled follows Shai-Halut.
Okay, so let me just crunch the numbers. Click, 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 click. I'm not doing anything. I'm just moving my fingers. But I'm pretty sure that that makes him micro-regional interstate influencer. Do you know Bombas? The socks? We could probably get a code for that.
Like the wind socks that collect water? So that we may terraform the planet? May we use these socks to terraform the planet? Is that what you mean?
I don't give a fuck what you do with those fucking socks. Mind if I vape in here? It's booberry.
Any waste of water is an insult to our ancestors.
Lame. All right, how do you feel about a house collab with you and Squawkalock? He's this gangsta-ass parrot, and he's got 14 billion people on TikTok. And he makes, like, these sounds. It's great. We all love it. Everyone loves it. They're lockstep loving it.
We can make the sounds at night in the safety of our home, Siege. Any other place, it would be dangerous, for we are sought by Harkonnens at every turn.
So you won't lip-sync Joe Biden?
What?
Well, how about an unboxing video where you can show off these glowing knives?
No one can see the Chris knife. It is a secret of our people.
So what am I doing here?
I don't know, and I wish you would leave. You have no still suit and are sweating profusely.
It is hot and ripe in here.
Get the hell out. Here's a thumper. Just be careful with the sandworms.
Can't I just Uber?
You know Uber? He's the second cousin of my brother. Uber is Chuck Obsa for take long time to get there.
I'm gonna go. Come here, Worm Taxi. Come here. So here's where the spice comes from.
Crazy motherfucker. You did it again.
This show is made possible by listeners like you. Thanks to our ad sponsors, you can support our shows by supporting them. For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to lastpodcastnetwork.com.